Welcome to the 12th episode of the Meet the Mancunian podcast, Social Impact Stories from Manchester. This is the season finale of season 4. I'm Peepa Thomas Sutcliffe, your friendly host. On the streets and nooks of Manchester, my inspiring Mancunian guests tackle their causes with grit and passion. They are leaders, worker bees, and community hosts, and they share their stories to inspire you all through the season. Relax, grab a brew, and listen in to the Meet the Mancunian podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or any of your favorite podcasting platforms. You can also check out all the episodes on my new website, www.meetthemancunian.co.uk. Don't forget, on my new website, you can actually choose episodes by category or by theme. For example, homelessness, or all episodes dealing with sustainability, or all episodes dealing with local history, or all episodes dealing with disability awareness, as some examples. I will be releasing a bonus episode next Tuesday on 14th February 2023, and then taking a two-month break for some travel until 11th April 2023, when I will launch season 5. In the meantime, I hope you can check out some of my interesting guests from seasons 1, 2, 3, and 4. There are 48 amazing episodes for your listening pleasure. Passionate about supporting the terminally ill, we hear from Susan Broughton, founder Purple Heart Wishes, in this episode. Yeah. I'm delighted to introduce my guest, Susan Broughton, founder Purple Heart Wishes. Thank you so much, Susan, for joining me today.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
So tell us first about how you find your passion for supporting the terminally ill. I know that you had a personal family experience that kind of motivated you.
So in 2009, I found out that my daughter Lindsay had a brain tumour. It sort of totally rocked our world. And from the point that we found out, we fundraised actively for the Brain Tumour Trust, just to see if we could try and find a cure for that, for what she had particularly. In 2009, in the November, in the December, they debulked it, as they call it. They removed the tumour. And then over the next 12 months, she was going for scans, etc., and everything was clear. Then come the end of 2010, they said, oh, it's come back. And we devastated. So, you know, they act very quickly with these sort of things, and because it was fast growing, you know, they took it out quickly. They can't get all of it, because, you know, as they dig deeper into your brain, it's going to affect everything that's going on. So they took it out, and then over the next 12 months again, everything was going along happily. She had radiotherapy. Didn't have chemotherapy at the time, but she had radiotherapy. And then they said, oh, it's gone. This was at the end of 2011. But then in the April, I started to notice the symptoms, you know, of her tumour. So the moodiness, the fact that she couldn't get out of bed, she had really bad headaches, and everything like that. So I said, okay, we need to go to the doctors again. And this was in the Easter weekend in April, and we had to take her into the hospital, and she was gutted. She hated the hospital, and they kept her in over the Easter weekend. Then they called me in. Lindsay would have been about 27 at the time, and they said that we can't take it out, because if we take it out, it's going to affect, you know, her standard of living, her quality of life. So, you know, what do you want us to do? And Lindsay had spoken to me before and said, if it comes back, I don't want another operation. So obviously I had to listen to her wishes, and we didn't take it out. But from that point on, instead of raising money for the brain tumor charity, we decided that we were going to give Lindsay, you know, every single day something fun to do. And one of her biggest wishes was to go to Thailand. So we raised a lot of money for her to go to Thailand. You know, we had a very generous benefactor who donated a lot of money to that so that she could go and do it. Hadn't even met this person before. They weren't known to us. And he donated quite a big sum of money, which allowed her the opportunity to go to Thailand for 3 weeks. Now, the consultants had said, don't let her go. If she goes, she's not going to come back. And she didn't want to go with me. She wanted to go with her friends. So a friend who's a doctor actually went with her. And I was like, okay, he's a doctor. He knows what to do. If anything's going wrong, he'll keep an eye on her. And when I was saying goodbye to her at the airport, I thought, do you know what? I don't know whether I'm going to see her again. But then she came back and she survived another 18 months, you know, after that, you know, and every day I took on the attitude that every day was just going to be something special. You know, we weren't allowed to be negative in front of her. We weren't allowed to argue in front of her. You know, I'd made the decision, if you're coming to see her, you have to be positive. You have to make every single moment fun. And so that's what we did. And, you know, we carried on making every day fun. And then, unfortunately, we lost Lindsay on the 26th of February, 2014. So after a bit of, okay, I don't know what to do, didn't raise any more money for the brain tumour charity, didn't sort of raise any money at all, to be honest. And then about a year later, I just thought, do you know what? I want to do this for other people. I want to make it special moments for other people. You know, I want to be able to say to somebody that's not very well, that can't go for a weekend breakaway, or, you know, can't buy their wife a gift or anything like that before they pass away. I want to be able to do that, you know, to be able to create a memory for someone else. So we set up Purple Heart Wishes, and St. Anne's Hospice in Little Holton, where Lindsay was cared for, you know, we told them that we were going to do this charity. And they were one of the first people that contacted us and said, oh, there's a man that's dying, and his wife's got control of all the finances, but he just wants to buy her something really nice to remember him by. Like, for instance, he wanted a Pandora necklace and it was £80. And I'm like, well, we can do that, you know. So we bought the necklace, we bought some flowers and everything like that to make it really special. And we took it to the hospice, and the, you know, the care workers and everything said he opened his eyes long enough to give it to his wife. Yeah. And it just makes you think, right, okay, that moment was such a precious moment for her that she'll always remember that time, that moment, you know, that happened, because he thought of something that he wanted to give her, you know, that he had control of and she didn't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's such an amazing cause. I've lost a dear friend who, I think he went in 4 months, if I remember right, you know, brain tumor as well. And he was only 31 at the time. So yeah. I can understand what you're doing is so important. So to the friends, to the family of those loved ones, and of course to the loved ones itself who are unfortunately, you know, terminally ill. Yeah. So tell us a little more about Purple Heart Wishes. It's, you know, I can imagine it was a very difficult time for you to be starting a charity, but it's a lovely way to tribute to your daughter.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I actually have a full-time job. So I actually do Purple Heart Wishes on the side. And during the pandemic, obviously, we didn't raise any money. We didn't grant any wishes. It wasn't possible. We weren't able to really do anything. And when we came out of the pandemic, I was at a point where I was like, oh, we're getting all these wishes. I have a full-time job, which I can't put the cost of my lifestyle on the charity. You know, I wouldn't want to do that to the charity. And so I thought, okay, what are we going to do? So me and my other daughter, Lee, you know, we was like, okay, what are we going to do? We're getting all these wishes. We can't cope. You know, how are we going to manage this? So in the end, we put out an advert on Facebook to look for a wish granter. And a young guy, Mark, actually came forward, who lives in Cirencester, you know, which is down south in Gloucester, which is where our charity is registered, although me and my daughter Lee live in Manchester. And I thought, do you know what? It doesn't, they don't have to be near me. Do you know what I mean? So long as we communicate almost every day, we have a meeting once a week, you know, we can actually do this. So we took on this wish granter called Mark, who now manages all the wishes. So he gets everything. He looks after all the wishes for us. But the charity has just gone mental. So before the pandemic, me and Lee were probably getting about 12 wishes a year. Do you know, not many. Now, since January this year, we've got 78 applications. Well, we've got 116 applications in, but 78 wishes that we've granted.
Wow.
So, you know, the charity is really taking off. A lot of people that come to us will be charities themselves or hospices. So we, like even the NHS, next week I'm going down to Birmingham to do a talk at a myeloma cancer NHS meeting that they're holding, and I'm going in there to talk about the charity, you know, which is absolutely amazing opportunity for us, you know. So we are getting heard of, and we do a lot of charity work here in Manchester. So at the moment we have a regular gig with Manchester City Football Club, so we work in one of their kiosks. And basically, we don't get paid, but we get a percentage of the takings from the kiosk.
Okay.
So the more volunteers that we can get, the more kiosks we can have, which means the more money that we can make. So, you know, from Manchester City Football Club, people volunteering their time raised £30,000 last year, which is a massive effort on their part, you know, going in every day, and not every day, but every home match and concerts and things like that. So it's amazing what we can do.
Oh, that's great. Can you tell us about some of the wishes you've granted? You talked about the gentleman who wanted to gift his wife a Pandora necklace. Yeah. Are there others that have kind of stood out to you? Because obviously you're granting a lot, but maybe a couple.
We had a young girl recently. She was only 21. She wanted to do a home dine experience, you know, for her family. So she wanted us to arrange a celebrity chef to come into her home and cook dinner for her family, and then she wanted a murder mystery experience. And so we sort of did all the invitations for her because she was inviting her family. We got a makeup artist in to do her mum's makeup. We had the house decorated. We've got hold of a young chef called Ryan Riley, who came in, who is just getting to be known in the celebrity chef world. And then we got a company come in to do a murder mystery experience with an actor called Murder Mystery Mayhem, they're called. And they came in and donated their time for free. And basically, you know, did the whole shebang for her family, and they had an amazing experience with that. Unfortunately, the young lady passed away a couple of days later. That's how close people are to us granting. It's like they're waiting for their wish to happen, and then they don't have that time anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's quite sad to know that sometimes people don't come to us until it's too late. And I always said that about Lindsay. Lindsay would not accept that she was going to die, basically. And when she was in the hospice, the nurse said, you know, we need to tell her. And I was like, no, we're not telling her. While she still has the belief that she's going to live, we need to not take that away from her. And I know that they'd taken her in and said to her, you know, you're really poorly. And this was like 2 weeks before she died. And she just turned around and said, yes, but I'm going to get better. So I think to myself, okay, if she's thinking that, she's a young person that doesn't want to accept that she's going to pass away, then all of those other people will be thinking it too. And that when they come to us, it's always almost as if, okay, there's a realization that they're going to pass away and it's going to be soon. Because when they come to us, you can guarantee within maybe 2 or 3 weeks they've passed away, which is quite sad. I'd like to think that there were parents and friends out there that know that somebody's gonna pass away and that they would come to us sooner so that they can enjoy the experience more than leaving it till the last minute. So that's what I've always sort of thought, and from experience, this is what I'm seeing with lots of people that come for wishes. It's not long afterwards that they pass away. We do have a good relationship with people like Arsenal and Liverpool and things like that, where we've been managed to get people to, you know, to go see football matches and things like that, and you know, parents who have arranged that for their sons. And you know, it's been lovely that people are becoming, you know, quite accommodating despite the current climate, you know, with, you know, financial situations and stuff like that. You know, people are still being quite generous and accommodating. So yeah, there are lots of other things. There's loads of other things that we do.
No, thank you for sharing that, and also to kind of putting out an appeal to listeners, if they have a family member or a friend, come to you early, so that there's more time and there's perhaps more experiences. Are there challenges that you've faced while you're trying to, you know, both grant the right wishes as well as maybe to raise funds or raise those experiences?
Well, for me, it will always be, I'm always the fundraiser. Do you know what I mean? I'm always the person that's going to be asking people for money, you know, because I don't have any sort of fear in telling my story, and people will buy my story to be able to fundraise for us, you know, to want to fundraise for us or stuff like that. I think for me, it's because we're still quite a small charity. Unless you're in Manchester or Cirencester, you won't really hear about our charity, although we do grant wishes all over the UK. Okay. You know, we've done Scotland, Northern Ireland, everywhere. We grant wishes wherever. The only thing for me is maybe getting out there enough to get people to fundraise for us, because I know although you may do something for somebody who's going through a terminal illness, you'll also find that, say for instance, there'd be the Cancer Trust and a hospice that may have looked after that person as well. So we might not necessarily be the person that's at the forefront of their mind when they think about fundraising, you know, sure, just because we granted a little wish. Do you know what I mean? So that as well can be quite challenging, you know, but otherwise, so long as I've got the money in the bank, then I'm quite happy to carry on, you know. So we've been quite good. We've been quite stable. And we've just recently, Sasha Lord has just decided to become a patron for the charity, which will project us a bit, you know, further up in the scale. However, when you Google us, we are at the top.
No, I actually think it's fairly unique, because I think there's Make-A-Wish, which works with children, and I've only heard of your charity. I haven't heard of others in this space.
I think there's four, but they're very specific to where they are. You know, like, so for instance, there's one down in London, which is just on the M4 corridor, which is just there. And then there's another one which only does up to 40, you know, so it's quite, and even they pass us wishes. They pass people through to us. So, you know, we're getting a lot of traction because people are passing them through to us.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I guess you talked about a couple of the wishes that you have granted. Mm. Oh, can you tell us a little bit about the impact you think you made? And you can answer that in any way you want. You can share one experience or you can talk about.
I think personally to people, we've made a really big impact, you know, on the person that's affected by the illness and also to the family and friends of that person, because for that moment in time, we know that they've written back to us, they've given us testimonials saying that we've never seen them smile in such a long time, or they've not laughed so much in a long, and that's a really big impact for me, knowing that people are feeling that we've done something so special for them. And you know, and if it makes that person smile for 2, 3, 4 hours of a day, then their family's going to be happy as well, you know. And I think personally for me, that is what, you know, affects me most, knowing that that's how, what the outcome of that wish is. Definitely.
Thank you. How can interested people reach out to you and learn more?
Okay, so we have a Facebook page, you know, Purple Heart Wishes. Instagram is PH Wishes. We have a Facebook, a website, which is purpleheartwishes.org. You can find us, you know, all over the place. And I think you know, if you're in Manchester or anything like that, then you should get in touch because we have a lot of exciting stuff going on.
Thank you. What advice would you have for people looking to start something similar in another part of the world or in another part of the UK? Mm-hmm. They want to get into this space. What's the best way to get around, to start?
Well, I think for me, I had a something personally affected me. You know, my daughter wasn't well, and I made the decision that I wanted every day of her life to be a new experience, you know, things that she'd never done. Horse riding, everything like that. I think if you're really passionate about that something, it's easy to get a charity started, because then when you talk to people about it, you're going to be passionate.
Yeah.
You know, if you think, right, okay, I'm just going to start a wish charity, but you don't know why and you don't have a story, it's very difficult to impulse people to come and help you or fundraise for you. You know, so that we had a story, and that story was to make sure that Lindsay had a new experience every day, like I said. But it meant it was easier for me to decide what sort of charity I was going to do, because I could see where the money was going. I knew that every penny that somebody fundraised for me was going to go on a wish for somebody else that was going to make them smile, you know, for however length of time it was going to be, you know, and it was going to create memories for them and their family when they're going through that really tough time. So it's just having a story and making sure you're passionate about it.
Thank you for sharing that. And an opportunity now for you to talk about anything coming up. You said there's some exciting plans in Manchester. Anything that you want to call out, please do.
So I'm not sure if you're aware, but Sasha Lord, he's the nighttime economy ambassador for the Northwest. So he's decided that he will be a patron for Purple Heart Wishes, who he's also the founder of the Warehouse Project and Park Life, which means that, you know, with his support, we'll be able to go to these venues and, you know, promote the charity as well as fundraise at the same time. But also for us, it means that we're targeting the age group of people that we can grant wishes to. So, you know, Park Life, you know, big, very big festival in Manchester, you know, the age group of people that we're trying to target is 18 to 55. So that's the sort of people who will have friends and family that may be going through all of this. You know, so this is a good, like I said, platform for us to go to. The funny thing is that Sasha actually knew Lindsay, which became, it was really bizarre, you know, after we approached him, he was like, oh, you know, Lindsay came and met me and did my in-ear plugs and was talking about her and everything. And it was quite nice to think that we've come in this full circle and met somebody that was involved with Lindsay and now is going to actually be part of our charity. So that is a big thing for us over the next 12 months. We've got lots of fundraising activity going on as well over the next 12 months, because we want to increase our wish granting over the next 12 months. It's on average, it's about 7.5 per month, but now we're going to go try and get 15, which doesn't seem a lot to many people, but to us it is a lot.
It's double what we're doing right now. So that's amazing. Good luck with that.
Yes, so our plan is to do that, and obviously with that we need to increase fundraising. So any fundraising activities anybody has going on that they would like to do for us, that would be absolutely amazing.
Thank you, Susan. What I didn't mention is that we have listeners from 44 countries, so it is good that you're talking about, you know, who's Sasha Lord or why Park Life is so big, because obviously it wouldn't always cover.
Yeah.
So my signature question that I ask all my guests, and this is my favorite bit of the podcast, is the first one for you is to describe the Mancunian spirit in a word or a phrase.
I think they're ultimately so friendly. You know, I've lived all over the world, to be honest. My father was in the army, and I did live in London for a short while. But I find that people down there is very fast paced. So it's like, got to be quick. They don't want to talk for too long, everything like that. But you come to Manchester and they are such friendly people, you know, and I've lived here now for, say, 15 years, I would say. And I actually enjoy it. You know, everything's together. Everybody will talk to anybody. And I'm sure that in Manchester, you know, when we have these tables where we have sharing tables and anybody sits with anybody, I'm sure that was invented in Manchester because, you know, people are so friendly. They just talk to anyone. They don't care. It's really, yeah.
That's a great one. And I totally resonate with that. As a brand new Mancunian, I'm experiencing that as well. So yeah, it's lovely. Can you share a Mancunian who inspires you and tell us why? And could be somebody from the past or from the current time.
Oh, does it have to be someone famous?
No. Anybody that you that inspires you.
It's very difficult to say. You know, I've worked with a couple of people, you know, in the past. I think that I'll tell you, the volunteers that we have for the charity, they all inspire me. They come every time, you know, and they're always smiling. They're so positive and really excited all the time. And when we go to the football and I watch these volunteers working away and they're just so happy and they're talking to everyone and you know, and then people say to me, you know, those you lot in there are the best, you know, in the whole stadium. I just think that people who give up their time for something else have to be admired, because, you know, they don't have to do that. Do you know what I mean? They don't have to do it at all. They just come along, whether it's raining. I remember being in the kiosk one day and two people walked in and, oh my God, they were so soaked through to their skin. And I was like looking at them. I was like, where's your coat? And they were like, we didn't need one. And they were just soaked to the skin. And we're all swapping T-shirts and everything like that to make sure that they're dry. And I just think that people that do something, you know, like I said, that doesn't benefit them at all, but it's benefiting something else. They're to be admired.
So a shout out to all the volunteers in Manchester. That's a good one. I'll take that. What's the most important life lesson you've learned so far?
I think that from Lindsay being poorly, being positive every day, but also, if you are upset with somebody, just tell them. Just tell them what you think. Get over it and move on. Do you know what I mean? Because life is so short. You don't know what is going to happen from day to day. You know, I know of some people that we've granted wishes for. They've been told that they're poorly and then they could die within weeks or months. Do you know what I mean? They don't have a long time to sort it out. And I know Lindsay had a friend that she fell out with, and it was very difficult for her to forgive. When I think to myself, you've just got to forgive. You know, you've got to forgive everything and just move on. So if you've got something to say, say it, move on. You've only wasted 10, 15 minutes of your day instead of pondering on it for like 3 days and then having a massive row and then not speaking to each other again.
It's a good tip, a difficult tip, not easy to follow, but it's a good one. If you could have one superpower, what would that be?
To help everyone. I would just love to be able, if somebody was like, I'd be there for them, you know, in my role that I have now and I at work, I am there for people, you know, to come and speak to, everything like that. And I just think that somebody needs somebody, and if you don't have somebody, I'd just like to be there for that person. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't want anybody to be on their own.
And much needed at this point of time when, you know, so many people can be quite isolated. Thank you for sharing that. Is there a funny story you'd like to share with listeners? Maybe something that you've come across at work or even, you know, in your being around Manchester? Maybe a doggy story.
A doggy story, Frank. So Frank grew up in Ancoats. He's on Instagram. He's got more followers than I've got. And he's called Ancoats Frank. That's his Instagram name. But he is just, so we actually live out in Denton now, but he whenever we go to Ancoats, he will drag me into almost every pub that he can go into. And he, and everybody knows him. They'll be like, "Oh my, is that Anko's Frank?" It's quite funny.
I'm going to check him out, Anko's Frank. I love it.
Yeah, he's quite a cool character. But I can't even think of a funny story. There'll be so many funny stories.
I think this one's nice. Anko's Frank going to the pubs and checking out his loyal followers, I guess.
Yeah. Definitely, he's a bit of a character. He's a little French bulldog. Aww. So he snuffles and snores. Yeah, he's quite character. You'll enjoy his page.
I'll definitely check it out. Well, Susan, thank you so much. That's what I have time for today. And
thank you so much for having me, Deepa.
Susan, I really enjoyed learning about helping terminally ill adults today. Dear listener, thank you so much for listening to the 12th episode of the Meet the Mancunian podcast, Season 4. I hope this episode and the podcast itself encourages you to follow your passions, inspired by the amazing Mancunian guests who feature here. Tune in every Tuesday for a new episode or log on to www.meetthemancunian.co.uk to listen to all the episodes and learn more about my podcasting story. Next week, on Tuesday, 14th February 2023, in a special bonus episode, there will be a focus on the most important life lessons my guests have shared on Season 4. As I said in the intro, Season 4 ends on Tuesday, 14th February 2023, and I will be taking a two-month break for some travel and finishing up at my current day job. Season 5 of the Meet the Mancunian podcast returns on Tuesday, 11th April 2023 with a new series of inspiring guests. I have started recording Season 5's interviews and think you should enjoy them. Please do leave a review or a voice message on my website www.meetthemancunian.co.uk. It takes only a few minutes. I look forward to hearing from you. You can also follow the Meet the Mancunian podcast on Twitter as @ManCunianPod or on Facebook and Instagram as @MeetTheManCunian. Do give us a like or a share. Thank you so much.